Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. What's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. And for this episode, I'm going to do another replay. This time it was my live that I did episode number 2, this time with Colin Mitchell from many things, Monster Chats. He also has a podcast, lots of things we get into. So this is my second live that I did, the second week in a row. Again, if you haven't checked him out yet, make sure to tune in Thursdays, 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern. Some, you know, sales, marketing, leadership, kind of inspiration for your day, education. Try to do it at a time that works for most people. Obviously, you should be selling, closing deals, having conversations, but this is a nice break. Plus, you've got these replays. And so Colin and I talk a lot of stuff, a lot about sales. He's in alignment with what I think. And so we just go on and on about sales, the right strategies, the right approach, lots of great things, a lot of good gems in this conversation for anybody in sales or sales leadership. So make sure to check this out. And again, so these are now happening on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube Thursdays at 8 a.m. Enjoy this conversation and this replay from my chat with Colin. What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday, November 12th. November, yes. Welcome to Authentic Persuader, a live show. I have with me my friend, and we've actually chatted a lot of times. Colin Mitchell is on the show. If you're not familiar with Colin, as you can see the banner going across if you're watching this live, four-time founder, podcast host, content creator, business guy, a swimmer, mindfulness nerd. His number's on there. He loves text. He is super interactive. Colin, welcome to the Authentic Persuader live show.
Yeah, awesome, man. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm super excited to jump in and just talk sales, and more sales, both of our love language. So we'll just see where it goes. I know we're going to have fun.
Yeah. And for anybody who doesn't know, like, this is actually the fourth official meeting of both of us. So I was on your podcast, then you did a different version of it, and I was on that one. You were on mine that came out a week ago. And then here we are, round number 4. And as you said, right before we hit it, you're like, yeah, this is, won't be the last as well, which I know. So it should be fun.
Yeah, no, I think that that's totally accurate. You know, some people you just really have that mutual alignment, and we could probably talk way longer than people are willing to listen. So the hardest part about this is probably going to be getting us to shut up.
Always. And when we've done the podcast stuff together, usually there's a limit. Like, we don't want a 2-hour, 3-hour, 1-hour session on a podcast. So it's like, okay, let's try to cram this into 20, 30 minutes. But we don't have to right now. We could just keep going. I mean, we have an hour. I think we both have until 9 a.m. So let's just rock.
Yeah. Where should we start?
One topic that you threw out there before this, you just like, I was like, okay, what do you want to talk about, Colin? You're like, top of the funnel. That's it. Let's just start there and then see where the conversation goes. What does that mean to you? What's your experience? Where are people doing it right? Where are people not doing it right?
Yeah. So top of funnel is always an interesting topic because it's something that a lot of salespeople struggle with, whether you're, strictly on outbound, working a mix of inbound and outbound, whether you're an SDR, whether you're a BDR or whether you're a full cycle rep, right? Filling the funnel is always something that people, I think, are looking for some sort of silver bullet. And unfortunately, there is no silver bullet.
There isn't.
There's good practices. There's things that you need to do. You know, having a proper mindset to me is one of the biggest things, right? And then you have your activity based things that you do, having a process around those, being consistent with them, being willing to try new things and being willing to push the limits and adapt are some crucial things that go with any sort of top of funnel activity.
Where do you think people go sideways? Let's start at the top of the funnel, which is like the testing and optimizing.
Yeah. So I would say the most common mistake that I have seen is that people try to focus most or all of their energy on one particular activity, right? Okay. So for example, there's a lot of people that are still very reluctant to use the phone. They don't like using the phone. They haven't, you know, had a good experience using the phone. They feel that they haven't figured out the silver bullet of using the phone. So they'll heavily rely on email, or they'll heavily rely on, you know, all LinkedIn prospecting, right? And unfortunately, you really just don't know which channel is going to work best for any given prospect. You know, okay. I'm a fan of using all of the channels and hitting them from all directions. And there's many different channels that you can use. The phone is one example. Email is another example. LinkedIn is another example. Text messaging is another great example. And good old fashioned handwritten snail mail, you know, notes are a great channel as well. Now I'm, you know, and one thing that I think that most people are really falling short is they're not using video as much as they should. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we all suck at video when we first start. We all do. So get over it, start doing it, and you'll get better over time with anything.
Well, but I think the challenge, let's say with video in particular, and I think with any medium, is that what you see people doing when you're scrolling through your feed or you're on YouTube, most of the time what you're seeing is pros, right? Somebody's been doing it a while. They've been at the game for a while. They're not an overnight success. They put together nice videos. They look good on camera. They look confident. They sound confident. Mm-hmm. It's all well crafted, right? And what you're doing is comparing it to them, right? You're saying, oh, well, they're amazing. I can't do that, right? I don't want to do that. I look terrible. And it's always fun. I've done this a couple of times recently where somebody that I watch on YouTube, let's say, for example, then I go back. I'll go all the way back to the beginning. I look at their first videos and they're just a bumbling hot mess. And they started out that way, right?
Yeah. But here's the thing. Here's what's interesting is when you're using video for prospecting, the less professional, the better. You don't need subtitles. You don't need a header. You don't need a footer. You don't need, there's some basics, don't do a video with like a bunch of dirty laundry in the background, go outside, go in the garden, whatever the case is, you can use video and just be real. Just be authentic. Just be yourself. And now I'm not saying that you necessarily want to always use video in the first outreach, but at the second, right? So if you send a LinkedIn connection request, obviously you can't send video there. Or once they accept or reply, that's when you can bring video into the conversation. If you, send a cold email, second, you can either in email, it's okay to lead with video, but I still prefer to use video in the second one because after they've replied or showed some sort of interest or intent, then you got their attention. You can waste a lot of time crafting video and getting personalized with it when you're using it on the first outreach. So I prefer and have seen more success in using it on the second touch.
And I think that's important too, because what I always project and look ahead, especially when I'm working with salespeople and sales teams, and I know for myself as well, is you get inspired, right? Somebody says, use video. So you're like, I'm going to do personalized video with a whiteboard and I'm going to write your name on it. And I'm going to send those out every single time I send a new cold email. And then people don't respond. And you're spending so much time doing this. And then it's just like, it's hard to sustain where you're like, this is great. I'm going to keep doing this with no response long term. Yeah. So I like what you said about sending something. And I had Mario Martinez Jr. from Vengroso on my podcast a few weeks ago. And one of the things he said is, don't make your call to action in your cold email like a call. Hey, do you have time for a 15-minute call? Like, just a call to action that's like, hey, reply back, or what do you think about this, or something to engage them without going in for the kiss on that first email.
No, 100%. And one thing that you mentioned, right, is people get inspired. You know, maybe somebody, maybe a colleague is crushing it with video, right? And then they try it, and then they crap all over it because it doesn't work after they've done it a few times. And so, you know, I actually saw a post from somebody who I have a ton of respect for, who is a seasoned sales professional, who is just now starting to use video. And, you know, he, you know, put some stats up. It's like, hey, I sent 40 personalized videos, you know, basically got, you know, yes, you know, basically he got nothing. He spent 20 minutes coming up with the message. He spent 1 minute recording each video. He spent 2 minutes uploading and editing each video, and 3 minutes writing a message to send with the video. So, you know, a total of like 4.5 hours for 40 touches, and he got zero responses. Right. So what's interesting about that is, with those stats, it could be super easy to get discouraged. Right. Yeah. But the thing is it's like, if you on January 1, right, you say, hey, I want to get in better shape and I want to, you know, lose 10 pounds and, you know, get a 6-pack. Right. But then you go to the gym for 4 days and you're like, man, this gym thing doesn't work. Then that's kind of the same, you know, situation. And, you know, you can see the parallel there. So, you know, don't try video for 1 day or for 1 week and be like, yeah, video prospecting doesn't work. You know, you got to like try something for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, because your first iteration of whatever that is going to suck.
Yep.
You're not going to be great at it. But the problem is a lot of people give up too early when trying something new.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, and not just because this is what I help people with, but I just know this, is if we use your gym example, then it's one thing to say January 1st, hey, I'm going to go to the gym. I want to lose weight. I want to get healthy. It's my New Year's resolution. I'm going to go to the gym 4 times, 10 times for a month. I don't get any results. And you actually don't know what you're doing because you just watched a video or you took someone's advice on how to use the equipment in the gym, versus I'm going to take this serious and I'm going to make a real change and I'm going to get some help. And you hire a personal trainer who's then watching you and making sure you're doing it right and checking your form. I see a lot of people who do things on their own, even if they're working at a company. They don't necessarily have support. They don't have training. They have coaching. They don't have a manager. And they're just trying this thing. They're literally using the machine at the gym the wrong way, and then wondering why they're not getting results. And so that, like, for me, that's what I do a lot, is like, okay, so let's do it. Let's play the long game, like you're saying, right? Like, you're not going to get instant results, but then let's also dial it in so that it's the most effective, so that you're just getting better with help.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is a great example, right? So, you know, if you're new to, say, using video or any new outbound,
anything,
you know, tactic, right? Don't just try to figure it out on your own. Like, you know, check with colleagues. Like, hey, is anybody using video? What are you doing? What's working? What's not working? You know, get help, get a coach, find somebody, do some research, you know, like really invest in trying to do it right, because you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't do that. Because there's a really good chance that you're going to make some mistakes, and then you're going to give up on a strategy that could be a winning strategy if you actually invested the time to seek out some help, get some feedback, you know, check with some peers, whatever the case is. You know, there's tons of these peer groups that are popping up, and like, hey, throw your email in there, throw your video, thinking about sending that, and you might get some feedback. We're like, hey, no, don't do that. Where it could be something like, hey, don't ask for the meeting as your call to action, you know, in the video, because you're not going to get very much success. Or it might be, hey, don't send a video in the first touch, send a video in the second touch, right? Or if you're going to send video in the first touch, don't spend time personalizing them. Send somewhat of a generic video that's maybe personalized to the industry or the role or something like that in the first touch, so that you're not spending a lot of time. right? That's the thing. You don't want to spend so much time on the first touch and really personalizing. That's why I'm more of a fan of bringing that personalization in the second touch.
Right. And what I see before we move on to more funnel stuff is that usually what happens, whether it's a video or it's a voicemail or it's a presentation or it's a elevator pitch, a monologue, one of two sides is usually what I see. One where somebody is just in love with what they've created and their idea, and they think it's amazing and they think everyone will love it, and it doesn't get a response. But they're just blinded by their love of the of what they're doing. And then the other part is they just doubt it so much and they don't believe in it. And then they just, you know, in that camp. And that's where the feedback, I think, is so important. So, all right. So what else in the funnel before we move on to other stuff?
All right. So let's talk about some other channels, right? So we talked a lot about video. I'm a fan of video. I'm a fan of email. I'm a fan of using LinkedIn, but I'm still a number one fan of the phone. And if you are scared of picking up the phone or you're not using the phone as your primary channel, I personally say, get the heck out of sales. Like, what are you doing? And that's a hard stance that I think, because there's a lot of people in sales that still aren't effectively using the phone, that still, you know, make dials just to hit their activity quota, that, you know, will literally just make calls. And I've heard people talk about this, and, you know, just to hit their activity quota. And what that looks like is like you're sitting there, you're dialing, and then somebody picks up and you're like, oh
my gosh,
hang up. Yeah. I don't know what to say. Somebody actually picked up, right? Mm-hmm. And this happens a lot more than you think, you know, and it's a lot to do with your mindset, right? You got to have confidence. Yes, what you say is absolutely important, but how you say it is so much more important. Tonality, you know, having that proper mindset, being confident, having a plan, you know, and yeah, you need a script, but you don't want to be so scripted, right? So finding a happy balance of, you know, what you need to say and accomplishing your goals and having a good structure, but not sounding like a robot.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about that, I have seen that many times where activity is the metric that they think is important, right? I've actually had reps who make 100 calls a day and it's 100 5-second calls because they pick up the phone and they dial and then they hang up and then they're getting that in the system. So it looks like the activity. And then, like you said, when you get on the phone, what's the point? And this is where I focus on helping people realize, like, if you have something valuable that you're helping the other person with and you could help them in some way achieve a goal or avoid pain or get out of a painful situation, whatever it is, then you owe it to them. Like, you're not bugging them. You're trying to help them. And when you shift to that, then it changes the mindset you have. And then obviously the tone of the conversation.
Yeah. When you believe in what you're selling, you can go into it with a positive mindset of like, not like, hey, I'm trying to push them to buy something, but I'm really trying to serve. I'm really trying to help. I know what I'm doing is good and they can benefit from it. And then you get into a place where selling becomes a lot easier. It's not such a struggle to make things happen because of that level of confidence and that positive mindset that you bring in. And one of the biggest challenges that I think a lot of salespeople still have today is, you know, they have a hard time focusing on, you know, work when they're bringing their personal stuff in. And this is a struggle, right? It's hard. We all got personal stuff, but you got to be, you know, using the phone effectively, consistently is a craft. And to really master it, you got to think of yourself like an athlete. Like, did you eat well? Did you get enough sleep? Are you surrounding yourself with positive people? Are you taking in positive information, or are you just, you know, cracking out on Netflix and watching the news? Like, there's a lot of factors that can contribute to whether you are successful or not on the phone. Those are just a few things to get in the right state to even start to pick up the phone, so that when somebody picks up, you don't, you know, almost fall out of your seat.
Well, and Stephen Pressfield wrote a book, I forget the second title, but it's about being a professional. His first one was The Work of Art, or Art of Work. Work one of the art of work, I think. But the second one is about professional. And it said the same thing, right? Like whatever you're doing, think about it like a professional, like an athlete does. Like you're saying, like if you're a top performing athlete and a professional, you're not going to be eating junk food, staying up late, and then showing up the next day for the game thinking you're going to do well, right? Like you might do that, but you shouldn't be surprised when your performance is bad. But sales, it's so funny because most salespeople don't think that way. They just play the game of sales. Like I joke about all the time, they're playing pickup basketball at the YMCA expecting NBA contract money. And they're just playing the game of sales.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you think you're going to go out, have a rough night, roll out of bed, you know, throw some water on your face and just go, you know, kill it on the phone, you're sadly mistaken. You know, you got to take this thing seriously. If you want to see some major success, like, hey, if you're cool making 50, 60K a year, you know, as you'd like to say, maybe go to customer service. Maybe you're an order taker, not a quota breaker.
Maybe. Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's totally okay. But that's not for me.
Yeah.
And I don't, for sure. You know, I want to surround myself with people that want to shoot for the moon.
So on the topic we were talking about with the first touch generic. So Emmanuel put in here, unfortunately, too many first touch inbounds are so generic that I move on. Right. And I think there's that balance with what you're talking about. It's like you could do a generic short video to send. And maybe the video is generic. The text is personalized. You're bringing up something that's going to get their attention, have you stand out. So I think there's always a good blend to, generic at a scale.
Yeah. Yeah. So he said, I mean, I don't know if he meant outbound or inbound, but yeah. So unfortunately too many first touch inbound are so generic. So maybe he's talking about inbound.
Inbound to him. So, and then he moves on because he gets so much incoming generic.
Got it. Yeah. You know, and the thing is here's what I found is a lot of short copy works better than long copy.
Yeah.
Like don't spit features and benefits and crap. Like two sentences tops. Two sentences.
I got to work on that. Sentences. My stuff is so long.
Yeah. Don't like throw up, don't vomit words at people because people don't read it. I mean, we all see it. You're getting them in your LinkedIns, you know, people are connecting you, sending you three paragraphs and then bumping it up and then sending a calendar invite. And please, for the love of God, do not send a calendar link in the first touch.
Nope.
Stop doing that.
Please.
You immediately go to spam. You immediately get deleted. You immediately get blocked. You immediately lose respect from your prospect. Do not send a calendar invite link in the first touch. Whoever said that was a good idea should be taken behind the barn.
I agree. I mean, again, it's people going for the close and hoping for the numbers game. If I send out 10,000 of those, then somebody's going to click on it and then I have a chance. But then even I would love, right?
If there's somebody out there that's doing that and they're seeing success, please tell me because I have yet to see it. And you know, I'm pitching people all the time and I'm getting pitched all the time. And I just know from on the receiving end, it's like, you're just like, come on, you can do better than that.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and even personalization is tough because you can tell if somebody really went deep in trying to personalize or if they just perused the first sentence of your LinkedIn bio and, you know, and a lot of just be honest. Like if you suck at cold email, be like, hey, I totally suck at cold email, but like, I know that I can help you. And here's why. If you're open to chat, let me know. Like it's literally that simple. Like stuff like that works. Like almost like you gotta be more human. You gotta be less scripted. Like I'm a fan of using emojis. I'm a fan of using, lingo. I'm a fan of like keeping it like super personable. Like a human talking to a human. Like we are friends. Like you want to be my friend, you know. And that sort of copy crushes it.
And I agree. I mean, I think the same thing, which is what I've done for a long time with teams on the cold call side, is also just call like it is. Hey, this is a cold call. You weren't expecting this call, but give me 60 seconds to see if it makes sense for us to keep talking. If not, no harm, right? Like, just call it what it is. Don't be like, hey, how are you? Oh, that's great. Hey, you know, and then
Jason, is this a sales call?
Oh, no, I am.
No,
I'm following up on an email. He's no. He's expecting my call. He's expecting my call because you sent him an email a week ago saying you were going to call. Right?
Yeah. Just call it like it is. And here's what I found is that when you call it like it is, if the other person is open and receptive to even listening, then that means they're more potentially open and receptive to buying from you and being open. Now, it takes skill, right? You're not calling and then being an order taker and just hoping to find someone who's got cash in their hand waiting to hand it to somebody, right? But
which is a whole other topic that we can go deep.
That's a whole other topic. But you know, you want that person who's at least open, who's saying, yeah, I'm in, you know, I'm looking for new ways. Because if they're so closed down, they don't want to talk to you, that's going to be a hard, but you know, a hard sell to get them to change their mindset.
And something that you really got to be mindful of outbound, right? Because there's two parts to your outbound, whether it's email, LinkedIn, phone, or all of them. There's people that are not interested, and for no reason other than they just don't want to talk to you right now. And then there's people that are not interested with a good reason, and those are two different things. And you really got to keep track of that, right? Because not interested. Like if I, you know, if I cold called into you today, Jason, and you had a bad day and you just hang up on me, that's not interested with no reason. Like you still might be a great prospect for me. I'm not going to give up there. Right. A lot of people, maybe they get hung up on once, twice. They call somebody 5-6 times, can't reach them. They give up. Right. I'm not giving up until you give me a great reason why you're not interested. And what that looks like is, hey, you know, Colin, sorry. I just signed, I hate my provider, but I'm locked in a 5-year contract and there's absolutely nothing I can do. That's not interested with a good reason. And that's when I can stop. You know, you don't want to irritate people and like ruin your reputation, right? So, but finding out what the reason is like, and it's very simple. You just got to ask.
Yeah.
Hey, Jason, I totally understand you're not interested. Do you mind if I ask why? Oh yeah, sure. You know, because this and this. And sometimes you'll be interested to find out that they're not interested because of a reason that's not even valid. And then if you are good at your craft, then you can overcome that and you can move the conversation forward. But if they say, hey, I'm locked in a 5-year contract, then you know, move on.
That's it. I'll call you in 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Put them on the calendar. But no, I mean, and I agree. And that's where a lot of people fall short when they're in a sales role. Again, whether it's for themselves, right? Like you or me or a coach or a consultant, or they're in a call center or, you know, they're in a retail store. Someone says no interested and not interested, and they take that at face value. When someone says, send me more information, they take that at face value. Well, and say, oh, this is great. I'm going to send them more information. They're really excited and interested in what I have to. No, they could just be nicely blowing you off without hurting your feelings and causing confrontation.
Here's an even better one. And this one really fools a lot of salespeople. Okay. because buyers are getting smarter, as we all know. And they, you know, send me the information.
Yep.
Most salespeople are not going to send you the information. You know, they've like, hey, I can send you the information. They have some sort of rebuttal for that. Right. Mm-hmm. But the one that really fools a lot of salespeople is, hey, I'm just really busy right now. Can you send me some pricing and then, you know, we can check, we can, you know, and then give me a call next week.
Yeah. Right?
And that is one of the most powerful tools for prospects to get you off the phone. And it fools a lot of salespeople. A lot of salespeople are getting sold by the prospect when they're saying something similar to that, because they're like, oh, this is fantastic. They've shown a level of interest because they want me to send them pricing. I'm going to create the, I know they have 50 employees. I'm going to create the opportunity in the CRM right now. I'm going to send them some pricing and then I'll check back next week. And that's where you get a lot of, you know, fake opportunities in your pipeline.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I don't understand why I didn't hit quota. I had so much in my pipeline. And it's because you're putting stuff in there that never had any business being there in the first place. Do not send pricing when you cold call somebody and they brush you off saying that, you know, they know that if they say, hey, send me pricing, they can get off the phone and go about their day. So please all the sales professionals out there, do not be fooled by this, because this is the best kept secret of prospects to get you off the phone.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting too, and I have, you know, my take on that. But I think what's fascinating is I'm listening to you talk. I think from a prospect's perspective, now they have a valid rejection point for when you call back or follow up, which is, hey, did you get my pricing? I'm just following up. I wanted to know if you got it. And then they can say, yeah, the pricing was too high. And then, so what happens is you basically given them the ammunition for them to tell you no, right? Like, yeah. You've basically served it up. Now, on an extension of that, what I found is as soon as you give the pricing, especially if you do it earlier, then you've instantly become a commodity and you're putting all the decision-making in their hands and they get to determine if there's value or not. Is $1,000 a good deal or a bad deal? You've lost all your ability to justify the value and show the value, and you're just hoping. I mean, the ultimate order taker. You're now just hoping because you handed them the menu at the restaurant and you're hoping they pick the lobster, but they're not. They're going to get a water and a side salad, right? If they get anything.
Or nothing at all.
Or nothing at all. They're going to walk out.
Yeah, they're going to walk out. They're gonna bring their lunch, you know. Here's the thing. You know, we live in a world that's very digital, and most people, not all, with some exceptions, right? Most people have their pricing on their website.
Yeah.
Most people. I mean, some consulting services do not. Some enterprise, you know, SaaS companies do not. Which, you know, I have a whole opinion about that, because there's nothing irritating about like doing some research or coming across something. It's like, you have no idea what it costs. You got to fill out a form. You got to give me information. You got to get on a demo. You got to go through an SDR and a BDR, yeah. You know, but anyway, let's just assume you have your pricing on your website, right? So it's like, hey, if you wanted to check pricing, it's totally public on our website, but that is not the reason I'm calling, because price is important, but it's not as important as the problems that I think I can solve for you. So my goal is just to set up a 15-minute call to see if it might be a right fit to have a further conversation that could lead to pricing. You know, so there's ways to get around that. But don't be fooled by that, because it's the easiest way to get you off the phone. And then you think you have somebody who's warm that's like as cold as ice.
Yeah. So you were chomping at the bit when I said follow up. The follow-up conversation. Why you go? For there's people who are going to be listening to this afterwards and not watching it, so they didn't see you just like wanting to pounce on me for saying follow-up.
I almost jumped through the screen. I'm like, oh.
We're in the same state, but if we were in the same room, you probably would have knocked the mic out of my hand and then jumped in.
Yeah. I got something to say about that.
I got it. And go for it. I love it. I know where you're going with this. So, all right.
So please don't say or write, I'm just following up. You know, you need to have a clear upfront contract with the prospect when you engage into the sales process with them. And you should never just be following up. At every step of the sales cycle, there needs to be a clear next step. And, you know, most people fall short on this because they don't push hard enough to get the next step scheduled. You know, and what that looks like is then you're just, hey, just following up again, just bumping this to the top of your inbox. Hey, I know I left you like 50 voicemails. Seems like, you know, you asked for pricing. I sent it and I haven't been able to reach you for the last 2 months. Just wanted to follow up, just circling back, you know, just wanted to check in. You know, that smells like desperation, you know.
So what should people do instead? Because I get those all the time. And I know they're using something that's also telling them when I open my email so they can see that I opened it. And then they follow up knowing that I'm alive.
Yeah.
And I'm ignoring them.
Yeah. All right. So it starts from the very beginning. If you screw up the beginning, you're going to get stuck in that vicious cycle. So, and there's a couple ways that this could go wrong in the beginning, you know, and I know that you and I have talked about it before, where sometimes you get that inbound lead. They're like, hey, I hate my provider and I'm ready to sign up. There's, you know, send me the pricing. I got my credit card ready. And then you skip all of the steps in the beginning. And then you're just following up and you're just following up and you're just circling back. So it starts with, regardless of how the lead got on your calendar, inbound, outbound, networking, family member. I don't care. Follow the process. There's a process for a reason. If you do a good discovery, you really don't even have to close.
Nope.
If you do a good discovery, all you're doing is holding their hand along the way. This is the path that we're going to. This is why you need my help. And this is the result of me helping you. So, Mr. Prospect, this is where you sign because you need this more than I need you. And that's the sort of attitude that you have to have. But, you know, sales reps get so excited when they get an inbound lead or somebody asks for pricing or somebody actually picks up the phone and expresses a little bit of interest that they skip crucial steps in the beginning of the sales process. You know, and what that looks like is digging deep on the problem that they currently have, why they think they need your help. And even deeper than that, what's the impact of not solving that problem, right? Whatever that looks like, because that's the pain. And a lot of people make mistakes on this too, is they just find the pain. Like, oh, they
that's don't
like
their vendor,
right? Yeah, I found they get crappy support from their current vendor. Like that's the pain. That's the problem. That's what we're solving. No, that's part of the problem, but what's the impact of that, of not solving that problem? Okay, well, we get crappy support, and typically we get crappy support because, you know, let's just say, you know, I run a UCaaS business, right? So because our phones go down at least twice a week for an hour, and our outbound team can't make any phone calls. How is that affecting your revenue? How is it affecting you hitting your goals? How is it affecting you personally? I'm not hitting my bonus because of this. I wanted to take my family on vacation, but I couldn't afford it because I didn't hit bonus. Like, you can go so deep, you know, how does it affect the company? How does it affect your department? How does it affect you personally? Like, there's so many things that you can go deep, and you better log that in the CRM. And that's the stuff that you're going to remind people so that you don't say, hey, I'm just following up. Hey, I know that instead of, hey, I'm just following up. Hey, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to help you be able to, you know, hit your goal this year so you can go on that vacation you've been thinking about. And here's how we're going to get there. Sign this document.
Right? All right. Like, so like in that last part, I think is important in logging it, and then the reminder and the follow-up part, and then we can work backwards from there because there's a bunch of cool stuff you said. But it's in that reminder, right? Like, hey, Colin, I'm just checking back in with you, or I'm looking for your feedback. Feedback's a really good one that I prefer to use. Hey, Colin, I just want to get your feedback on the information that I sent you. When we talked, you said it was very important to fix your downtime and you were losing a lot of revenue with your team, and I want to help you with that. I know that was important to you. So let me know when we can continue our conversation, right? So yeah, I'm thinking about you. I don't care. Yeah. I don't have a problem, right? This is what I tell everyone I work with.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. There's 7 billion people on the planet. I don't need you to buy from me. Like, I will find other people. I want you to buy from me because I know I can help you. But I, you know, ultimately I'll find somebody else.
Yeah. Right? And if you have a proper upfront contract with them, like, hey, Jason, at any point of the process, if you decide this is not for you or we're not the best fit,
yeah,
please do both you and me a favor and just let me know. Because there's a lot of people that do need my help, and I'd rather focus my energy there. And I don't want to irritate or bother you because I know you have important things to focus on as well. So if any point you're not going to hurt my feelings and we can part friends, you know, that's the best thing you can say. Hey, at any point you decide this is not a good fit or we're not the best option, just let me know. We can part friends. No problem. And most people don't do that. And even if they do that, they don't bring it up again because they're scared of the answer that they're going to get. But what you don't understand is a no is a win too. A no is a win because it's going to tell you that you don't need to waste your time or your energy on that person anymore. And you can start to focus on people that really do want your help, that really do value what you do, that have an impact that's really hurting their business. And they're willing to, you know, go through the process of change to sign up with your product or service.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, because from a sales perspective, salesperson who's not performing like they should, right? They're not closing enough, they're weak, or they're an order taker, somewhere in there where they're just not hitting where they want to be in sales, is that they're afraid of making that upfront contract. They're afraid of giving some possibility that it couldn't work out and that you can't close the deal, because they're worried from a scarcity standpoint that what if that person leaves and I don't close that deal? Like, what do I have? When you're talking about, I'm literally thinking about relationships, right? We're in a relationship. Like, hey, if this is not a good fit and we're not going to be good together, like, let me know. Like, if you're unhappy, let me know. Versus what people do is, let's just sweep it under the rug because, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't want to die alone and sad. And so, you know, I'd rather be in this than, you know, call it what it is. If it's not a good fit, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there's people that would probably stay in a relationship way longer than they should. So it's obviously a problem across the board with human beings, not just salespeople.
For sure. Right. And then salespeople bring that with them and bring that kind of mentality, that mindset, you know, whatever that baggage is or whatever that frame of mind and lens is, whether it's abundance or scarcity or service and duty or, you know, manipulation, whatever it is they're bringing with them. Something else you said that was fascinating and just really quick, but I want to make an analogy with it, is you're talking about reps who only focus on the pain. Let me find your pain and then leave it at that and hope that if it's painful, you'll realize you need the solution. I don't know the specific stats, but we all know stories of or have seen people who are unhealthy and on the verge of a heart attack, and they go to a doctor and the doctor says, you need to lose weight or do this or do this or do this, and they don't want to change their lifestyle. The doctor is pointing out the pain. Everybody knows the pain. The patient knows the pain. The doctor knows the pain. They leave it at the pain, and then there's no solution, right? Then people still die from heart attacks. They're still unhealthy. They're not changing their behavior. And then there's stories I've heard where doctors say, hey, do you want to be there to walk your kids down the aisle when they grow up or see them graduate college? And it's like, oh yeah, like now there's this bigger thing, right? And so when doctors do that, it's a much more effective sale, if you will, on somebody taking action, which is the same thing you're talking about. Like, look, not just the pain is a starting point. And then, like, why does that matter? Like, what's the long-term benefit or cost?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great example of helping people wrap their head around the importance of digging deeper than just the pain, right? Mm-hmm. Or just the problem. Because people are so quick to jump to, here's the problem, I have the solution. Here's the problem, I have the solution, right? Oh, you have downtime? Well, we have 99.999 uptime. We have the solution.
Of course.
Sign right here. No. What's the impact of that downtime? What is it going to cost you if you don't solve it? Like, those are the things that matter. And then what's interesting is when you take that approach, price doesn't matter.
Nope.
It's not about what you're paying versus what I'm charging, right?
Nope.
I mean, there's so much more than that. You know, I had a conversation the other day with somebody who is in sales, and we were a lot more expensive, but they're, you know, going with us because we're the better option. We are the best fit. We are what they're looking for. We are the best solution to the problem that they have. So, a lot of this comes back to salespeople undervaluing themselves.
Yeah.
If you don't value yourself and what you do, then you're never going to have the level of confidence that it takes to win on all of these things that we're talking about.
And what I put on the screen here for anyone that's watching this, I put ask for the close, because at one point when you were talking a few minutes ago, you were talking about, if you do your discovery right, you uncover what you need to uncover, not just the pain, but all of those things that you mentioned. When you do that right, you don't have to ask for the close. You're basically just guiding them arm in arm to cross the finish line and then telling them what the next step is, right? So I think the challenge is a lot of salespeople are taught, or they see this thing and they say, okay, always be closing, ask for the close. Like, you've got to be good at asking. Like, here's the presentation, here's my demo, now I've got to ask for the sale. And we won't even get into the always be human part, because they can check out our podcast together when we did that. But your thoughts on, like, where, if you should be relying on asking for a close, like where that fits in.
Yeah. So it's an interesting topic, because when I say, like, don't close, like, you got to ask for the order.
Always close.
You do got to ask for the order, but the sale is not made by the close. The sale, you know, and this is not, you know, 100%, right? There's some people that, you know, are easily sold and you can manipulate mm-hmm. them and you can get the business. Like, that's fine, but that's only going to take you so far. You're typically going to feel like crap and you're never going to get, you know, you're never going to be a true sales professional, right? Like
right.
if you're, you know, tricking and persuading people to, you know, sign and sign up and, you know, that's a whole nother topic, but to be a sales professional, make a career out of this and make some, you know, major money. Okay. It's a craft. And you do have to ask for the order, but you don't have to be a great closer to be a great sales professional.
Right.
You got to be a great problem solver. You got to be a great, you got to be great at diagnosing the problem, the impact, and having a servant mindset to lead them along the journey of your sales process. Right. And yeah, at some point you do need to ask for the order. And that typically looks like you reminding them of the stuff that you discuss, because every conversation that you have after discovery, after, you know, qualification, whatever you want to call it, everything you do after that is framed around that conversation. So how deep you go, how effective you that conversation is, how good you are at that is going to determine the likelihood of you closing the deal.
Got it. I love it. We got Natalia saying all ears. I don't know if she'd listen to us or just in the sales process, which I think, you know, I mention all the time, two ears, one mouth, right? Listen twice as much as you talk, you know, bring up stuff, ask questions, you know, kind of plant the seeds and then let the other person talk and then listen to it, which I think is, you know, so key. All right. So here's what I want to do in our last 15 minutes here, which time is flying. And of course, like I did last week when I had, my friend Jared on the show, I had all these questions planned and then we're just riffing. So sure. What I want to do here is a lightning round ish for this part. And we chat about it a little bit in advance,
all right.
But for people to understand what Monday was my birthday. And LinkedIn, you know, is nice. It tells the world that it's everybody's birthday. And then everyone sends you messages and people that you know. It's kind of cool because there's people I haven't talked to. The algorithm doesn't show you everybody in the feed. So you kind of lose touch and the inbox is garbage in LinkedIn. And so like you just lose people in conversation sometimes. So that's fun. And then you just get random stuff. Like, you know, if you're connected to enough people, you're just getting random happy birthday wishes, which I think is fun and cool. This year, what I decided to do was I thanked each person. I appreciate it. I think it's cool. Even if it's automated, even if it's from an automation robot, like whatever. But then I replied to everyone and that I didn't know. And I said, hey, what do you think of when you hear the word sales? And I wasn't sure if I was going to get any response. I thought, okay, here's some weird dude saying, thanks for the birthday wish. By the way, the gift that I want is for you to answer my question and do more work. And I was super surprised that I actually got a whole bunch of responses. I didn't count it, but I think it's somewhere
around. This is going to be fun.
50, 60 responses. And so I'm actually working on an article. I'm taking them and I made bullet points out of them. Just kind of, it's all over the place. I was thinking it would go one way based on why I started it. And then it went all over the place. So I have some of the responses I want to put on here. And then what I want to do is I want to get your feedback on why you think it happens that way. Just whatever comes to mind on your thoughts.
Yeah.
So here's one. Sales equals stress, accountability of having to sell out goods, services, technology, ideas, whatnot with no escape because it's a numbers game.
Ooh. Ouch.
So that's kind of not on the positive side. That doesn't sound happy.
No, this is the common perception that a lot of people have of salespeople. It's why people have fancy titles that aren't just sales, you know, technology advisor,
account executive,
all kinds of stuff. I don't know. There's a bunch of them, right? It's why, I mean, it's even why people call themselves an SDR or BDR because they don't want to say sales development rep, you know?
Yeah. Or cold caller.
Right. Yeah. And it's because of people, you know, not leaving people with a positive experience, mm-hmm. you know, like the experience that you give somebody, whether they buy or not, is so much more important than you think. Because that's going to determine, one, whether they do business with you now, whether they do business with you later, or whether they decide to refer people. Because if you're really good at what you do and you really try to bring value. And sometimes we've talked about this before. That means not doing business with them. Like, hey, Jason, right. I thanks so much for the opportunity. And for telling me what you're looking for. Unfortunately, I'm not the best person to solve that for you. However, here's some resources, here's some options, and I wish you the best of luck. And I'm happy to help you, if you have any questions or anything, as you try to figure this out. So sometimes, leaving the sale is the best thing to do. And so it's all about the experience that you're giving people. And, if you're just following up, not adding any value, harassing them, being rude when you don't get your way, then you're leaving them with a bad experience. And that's when people like, I don't know who responded, who wrote this, but obviously this person has had a bad experience probably many times, with salespeople. So as a sales professional, think about that. What experience, what reputation do I want to have? And the problem is a lot of salespeople tend to have big egos, right? And sometimes you got to dumb that down and just, be humble, You don't need to beat on your chest every time you get a sale and like, yeah, I tricked him, just take pride in giving people a good experience, whether they do business with you or not.
And I think what also too, because my podcast before I renamed it was called the Sales Experience Podcast. And I also look at it from the sales experience, and the experience you're having as a salesperson should also feel right. And you're in control of your side of the experience. And when I look at something like this, where that experience, if this is coming from the salesperson's perspective, where it feels like there's no escape and there's a numbers game, to me, that's a bad experience, a painful experience. I mean, not like you have to do it one way or another, but if that's the feeling you have, like maybe that's not the experience. All right, so we're failing at the lightning round, but let's keep going. Let's go on to the next one. So the second one, sales equals gets us to interact with a lot of people, teaches us to understand the people. You find a lot of pleasure doing sales. Sometimes it gives you pain as well.
I like that. I think that's pretty accurate. Like, a lot of sales is meeting people, building relationships. Now, being great at building relationships is not enough for you to be a successful salesperson. Like, you got to have some skills, and a lot of those we talked about. But it is something that can be fun, can be exciting, that can give you a lot of, fulfillment of like helping and serving people and leaving them with a positive experience. I like that response. And you should be, more people should be trying to give people that sort of opinion about salespeople.
And I love the honesty, right? Which is that there's a lot of pleasure doing sales, and sometimes it gives you pain as well. Again, it's cliche and it's classic and it's cheesy, but if it was easy, everybody would do it.
But even deeper than that, you're going to, the best salespeople get more no's than yeses.
That's it, man. And if you look at it like a Hall of Fame, let's say baseball player, if they're hitting 33%, that means they're failing 2 out of 3 times at the plate, and they're Hall of Fame millionaires, right? For failing 2 out of 3 times. Sales, if you're closing 30%, that's pretty amazing depending on how targeted your conversations are. And so you're going to hear a lot more no's than yeses. All right, next one. Sales equals pushy, and then I get defensive and brace myself for the onslaught. So obviously they're coming at it from a client side. I would like to think of sales as relationship building and providing value to customers for their needs. So there's what they're experiencing and then what they would hope it would be or wish it was.
Which is fair. I think this is accurate. Like, if you're a salesperson listening to this, joining us live, on whatever platform, or listening to it later, or the audio version on the podcast, like, if you're a salesperson, what sort of experience are you giving people? Are you being pushy? Or are you adding value and, focusing more on them and the relationship than, just walking around with your stanky commission breath?
That was going to lead into my next part real quick, which is, why does the pushy happen?
The pushy happens lack of confidence a lot of times, right? Like desperation. A lot of times from desperation, like, oh, I put all this junk in my pipeline that's not closing. I gotta get this sale. right?
Yeah.
So, you know,
and you know, and lack of training, lack of coaching, accountability, watching movies. None of them turn out well, but watching movies like Boiler Room or Wolf of Wall Street or, you know, those kind of things where it's like always be closing and just this hard, hard close, right?
And there's a lot of people that still do it that way, you know, obviously based on these responses. You know, the thing that's interesting is when you're pushing, so activity quotas create a lot of stress for people.
Yeah.
And activities are important. Like you do need to do something every day. Right. But I've seen, I hate to say this, but I've seen people a lot more successful that have a lot lower activity volume.
100%. I mean, it's about, you know, focused and the
managers the hate it. Managers hate it.
They do. But it's about results, right? So is it, you know, if we look at sports, does it matter how many stats you had on the stat board for your individual player sheet, right? Whatever game you're playing, or is it the W, right? Like, did you win? Did we win the game or not? Did you win the game of sales in this period? Which is what I always look at. If you're winning and you're closing the deals that you need to close, how you got there doesn't matter. If you're not winning, then we need to go backwards and see if you're doing enough or if you're doing the right things that could move the needle. But if you're winning and you're making 10 calls a day or you're having three, I've worked in call center environments where the goal is two deals a day, like for, you know, kind of business to consumer. And literally I've had people who crushed it and did four deals a day on five phone calls. And then other people who made 200 phone calls and couldn't close the door, right? Yeah. It doesn't matter. Like, it's quality over quantity.
100%. 100%. And something that you said, which is interesting, is if you're winning, right?
If you're winning.
And what you have to think about is your definition of winning. Because if your definition of winning and your manager's definition of winning, if there's a huge gap in between that, then there's going to be problems, right?
Always.
Some people are comfortable with making 60, 70,000 or 100,000. Yep. And your manager might want you to make 200,000, but you just don't care.
Yep.
You know, so you got to make sure that, like, what your goal is or what your manager's expectations are and what you're, you know, willing to put in, there's got to be some agreeability on that.
Yeah. All right. Next one. And this is from my friend Brick. When I asked him, he said, I don't feel one way or another about other than a business necessity being sales. But if you alter it to say salesman or saleswoman, then I conjure up images of a used car salesperson. Here's what's fascinating is I question whether most people have ever experienced the classic plaid jacket tie wearing used car sales archetype that people picture in their brain, right? That's not fair to people who sell cars, all of them. Like, that's not fair. But everyone, it's just like this urban legend that's passed down. Even if you've never bought a used car from someone like that, which is just fascinating.
Or even a car in general,
You
know, the challenge with the sales process of buying a car is it's that just jamming the deal, negotiating, being sneaky, weird tactics. Like, that's, but if you've ever bought a Tesla, it's a totally different experience.
Done and done. Like Saturn. Saturn, in the 90s did that too. It was like flat price. You walk in, there's no negotiating. It is what it is. They were the first dealership to do it.
But it's It's a service-driven sales process.
Yeah. Which is fascinating, because what's funny about my friend Brick is that he actually bought a car, I think through Carvana, where it's through the app, through a vending machine, delivered on a truck. He never went anywhere. It just showed up. That's how much people who don't want to deal with salespeople will avoid it by buying a car out of a vending machine, which should indicate like that process is broken. Salespeople are not providing value, or their intentions are not aligned.
I have a weird thing about, I actually enjoy negotiating with car salesmen.
I know. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
I love walking out with the car and them just like,
that
deal.
All right. One more here. This one here, and end on a good note, because it's not all negative stuff. I actually got more positive than negative kind of vibes.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be as fun to talk about.
Yeah, and I really want to address those, because from a public or from a sales standpoint, those are the ones that people struggle with, right? And so this one here, sales is a service to help the buyer come to a decision that's in their own interest in some way or form. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That is the experience you should be striving to leave people with, right? Like you served, you helped them come to a decision on their own to realize that you're the best person to solve that problem for them.
And that might be the most complete statement because there's one part in there that usually gets missed, which is in the middle, which is come to a decision. Order takers aren't good at helping people come to a decision. They're good at presenting the info, giving a good demo, building relationships, lots of rapport, lots of empathy. Lots of follow-ups, as we talked about, but not decisions, not like action, right? A sales professional is helping someone take action if it's something they can solve or help with in some fashion. So
a good sales experience on both ends should be a collaborative sort of experience, you know, where you're working together to find the problem, solve the problem, and go on that journey.
Yep. Awesome. Colin, thank you. As expected, here we are at 59 and a half minutes and still a bunch of stuff we could talk about. Keep going. As always, I love chatting with you. Literally resonates with me. Hopefully resonates with people watching this. If you're watching this live, you can see it on the screen. If you're on LinkedIn, you can find Colin Mitchell. It's /Colin-SalesHustle. You can just search for him and find him on there. Also, he has a podcast. It's called the Sales Hustle Podcast. I highly recommend it, not just because he had me as a guest, but because it's amazing and he cares about sales. Like, I really do appreciate the message you're putting out there, Colin. So please check it out. There's a link on the screen right now, but you can go to pod.link/saleshustle. And that's like a hub for everywhere you can find the podcast. You also have the salescast.co website. Did I leave anything out, Colin?
That's it. That's all the goods. Thanks so much for having me on. I have to admit, I'm a little bit sad that it's coming to an end.
I know. Me too. And I had a bunch more buttons I could press here on this fancy thing, and I just got so excited. So I appreciate you coming on here. And for everyone that watching, I appreciate that, or listening to it in the replay. And if you're ready to become an authentic persuader, definitely go to authenticpersuasion.com and find the book and buy that there. Also, I launched a new program for coaching. One of the things with coaching for salespeople is usually it's like a once a week, once a month, or group. So I launched this thing called Vox with Jason. So if you're not familiar, Voxer is a voice like walkie-talkie app. And so I'm doing this kind of live, like more interactive, more real-time coaching with people. So if you want help with sales, check this out. I just launched this site this week, voxwithjason.com. That's it. And go out there and become authentic persuaders. And like Colin said, focus on that sales experience. Thank you. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.